Ashenden, W. Somerset Maugham. Chapter 9. Gustav. When Ashenden, given charge of a number of spies working from Switzerland, was first sent there, R., wishing him to see the sort of reports that he would be required to obtain, handed him the communications, a sheaf of typewritten documents, of a man known in the Secret Service as Gustav. "He's the best fellow we've got," said R. "His information is always very full and circumstantial. I want you to give his reports your very best attention. Of course, Gustav is a clever little chap, but there's no reason why we shouldn't get just as good reports from the other agents. It's merely a question of explaining exactly what we want." Gustav, who lived at Basel, represented a Swiss firm with branches at Frankfurt, Mannheim, and Cologne, and by virtue of his business was able to go in and out of Germany without risk. He traveled up and down the Rhine and gathered material about the movement of troops, the manufacture of munitions, the state of mind of the country, a point on which R. laid stress, and other matters upon which the Allies desired information. His frequent letters to his wife hid an ingenious code, and the moment she received them in Basel, she sent them to Ashenden in Geneva, who extracted from them the important facts and communicated these in the proper quarter. Every 2 months, Gustav came home and prepared one of the reports that served as models to the other spies and in this particular section of the Secret Service. His employers were pleased with Gustav, and Gustav had reason to be pleased with his employers. His services were so useful that he was not only paid more highly than the others, but for particular scoops had received from time to time a handsome bonus. This went on for more than a year. Then something aroused R's quick suspicions. He was a man of an amazing alertness, not so much of mind as of instinct, and he had suddenly a feeling that some hanky-panky was going on. He said nothing definite to Ashenden. Whatever R surmised, he was disposed to keep to himself, but told him to go to Basel, Gustav being then in Germany, and have a talk with Gustav's wife. He left it to Ashenden to decide the tenor of the conversation. Having arrived at Basel, and leaving his bag at the station, for he didn't yet know whether he would have to stay or not, he took a tram to the corner of the street in which Gustav lived, and with a quick look to see that he wasn't followed, walked along to the house he sought. It was a block of flats that give you the impression of decent poverty, and Ashenden conjectured that they were inhabited by clerks and small tradespeople. Just inside the door was a cobbler's shop, and Ashenden stopped. "Does Herr Grabo live here?" he asked in his none-too-fluent German. "Yes, I saw him go up a few minutes ago. You'll find him in." Ashenden was startled, for he had but the day before received through Gustav's wife a letter addressed from Mannheim in which Gustav, by means of his code, gave the numbers of certain regiments that had just crossed the Rhine. Ashenden thought it unwise to ask the cobbler the question that rose to his lips, so thanked him and went up to the third floor in which he knew already that Gustav lived. He rang the bell and heard it tinkle within. In a moment, the door was opened by a dapper little man with a close-shaven round head and spectacles. He wore carpet slippers. "Herr Grabo?" asked Ashenden. "At your service," said Gustav. "May I come in?" Gustav was standing with his back to the light, and Ashenden couldn't see the look on his face. He felt a momentary hesitation and gave the name under which he received Gustav's letters from Germany. "Come in, come in. I'm very glad to see you." Gustav led the way into a stuffy little room, heavy with carved oak furniture, and on the large table covered with a tablecloth of green velveteen was a typewriter. Gustav was apparently engaged in composing one of his invaluable reports. A woman was sitting at the open window darning socks, but at a word from Gustav, rose, gathered up her things, and left. Ashenden had disturbed a pretty picture of connubial bliss. "Sit down, please. How very fortunate that I was in Basel. I've long wanted to make your acquaintance. I've only just this minute returned from Germany." He pointed to the sheets of paper by the typewriter. I think you'll be pleased with the news I bring. I have some very valuable information. He chuckled. One is never sorry to earn a bonus. He was very cordial, but to Ashenden his cordiality rang false. Gustav kept his eyes, smiling behind the glasses, fixed watchfully on Ashenden, and it was possible that they held a trace of nervousness. You must have traveled quickly to get here only a few hours after your letter, sent here and then sent on by your wife, reached me in Geneva. That's very probable. One of the things I had to tell you is that the Germans suspect that information is getting through by means of commercial letters, and so they've decided to hold up all mail at the frontier for 48 hours. I see, said Ashenden amiably. And was it on that account that you took the precaution of dating your letter 48 hours after you sent it? Did I do that? That was very stupid of me. I must have mistaken the day of the month. Ashenden looked at Gustav with a smile. That was very thin. Gustav, a businessman, knew too well how important, in his particular job, was the exactness of a date. The circuitous routes by which it was necessary to get information from Germany made it difficult to transmit news quickly, and it was essential to know precisely on what days certain events had taken place. "Let me look at your passport a minute," said Ashenden. "What do you want with my passport?" "I want to see when you went into Germany and when you came out." "But you don't imagine that my comings and goings are marked on my passport. I have methods of crossing the frontier." Ashenden knew a good deal of this matter. He knew that both the Germans and the Swiss guarded the frontier with severity. "Oh, why should you not cross in the ordinary way? You were engaged because your connection with a Swiss firm supplying necessary goods to Germany made it easy for you to travel backwards and forwards without suspicion. I can understand that you might get past the German sentries with the connivance of the Germans, but what about the Swiss?" Gustav assumed a look of indignation. "I do not understand you. Do you mean to suggest that I am in the service of the Germans? I give you my word of honor. I will not allow my straightforwardness to be impugned." "You would not be the only one to take money from both sides and provide information of value to neither." "Do you pretend that my information is of no value? Why then have you given me more bonuses than any other agent has received? The colonel has repeatedly expressed the highest satisfaction with my services." It was Ashenden's turn now to be cordial. "Come, come, my dear fellow. Don't try to ride the high horse. You don't wish to show me your passport, and I'll not insist. You're under the impression that we leave the statements of our agents without corroboration, or that we're so foolish as not to keep track of their movements. Even the best of jokes cannot bear an indefinite repetition. I'm in peacetime a humorist by profession, and I tell you that from bitter experience." Now Ashenden thought the moment had arrived to attempt his bluff. He knew something of the excellent but difficult game of poker. "We have information that you've not been to Germany now, nor since you were engaged by us, but have sat here quietly in Basel, and all your reports are merely due to your fertile imagination." Gustav looked at Ashenden and saw a face expressive of nothing but tolerance and good humor. A smile slowly broke on his lips, and he gave his shoulders a little shrug. "Did you think I was such a fool as to risk my life for £50 a month? I love my wife." Ashenden laughed outright. "I congratulate you. It's not everyone who can flatter himself that he's made a fool of our Secret Service for a year. I had the chance of earning money without any difficulty. My firm stopped sending me into Germany at the beginning of the war, but I learned what I could from the other travelers. I kept my ears open in restaurants and beer cellars, and I read the German papers. I got a lot of amusement out of sending you reports and letters." "I don't wonder," said Ashenden. "What are you going to do?" "Nothing. What can we do? You're not under the impression that we shall continue to pay you a salary." "No, I cannot expect that. By the way, if it's not indiscreet, may I ask if you've been playing the same game with the Germans?" "Oh, no!" Gustav cried vehemently. "How can you think it? My sympathies are absolutely pro-ally. My heart is entirely with you." "Well, why not?" asked Ashenden. The Germans have all the money in the world, and there's no reason why you should not get some of it. We could give you information from time to time that the Germans would be prepared to pay for." Gustav drummed his fingers on the table. He took up a sheet of the now useless report. "The Germans are dangerous people to meddle with." "You're a very intelligent man. And after all, even if your salary stopped, you can always earn a bonus by bringing us news that can be useful to us, but it will have to be substantiated. In future, we pay only by results." "I'll think of it." For a moment or two, Ashenden left Gustav to his reflections. He lit a cigarette and watched the smoke he'd inhaled fade into the air. He thought, too. "Is there anything particularly you want to know?" asked Gustav suddenly. Ashenden smiled. "It would be worth a couple of thousand Swiss francs to you if you could tell me what the Germans are doing with a spy of theirs in Lucerne. He's an Englishman, and his name is Grantley Caper."
"I've heard the name," said Gustav. He paused a moment.
"How long are you staying here?"
"As long as necessary.
I'll take a room at the hotel and let you know the number. If you have anything to say to me, you can be sure of finding me in my room at 9 every morning and at 7 every night."
"I shouldn't risk coming to the hotel, but I can write."
"Very well."
Ashenden rose to go, and Gustav accompanied him to the door.
"We part without ill feeling, then?" he asked.
"Of course. Your reports will remain in our archives as models of what a report should be."
Ashenden spent 2 or 3 days visiting Basel. It didn't much amuse him. He passed a good deal of time in the bookshops, turning over the pages of books that would have been worth reading if life were 1,000 years long. Once he saw Gustav in the street. On the fourth morning, a letter was brought up with his coffee. The envelope was that of a commercial firm unknown to him, and inside it was a typewritten sheet. There was no address and no signature. Ashenden wondered if Gustav was aware that a typewriter could betray its owner as certainly as a handwriting. Having twice carefully read the letter, he held up the paper to the light to see the watermark. He had no reason for doing this except that the sleuths of detective novels always did it, then struck a match and watched it burn. He scrunched up the charred fragments in his hand. He got up, for he'd taken advantage of his situation to breakfast in bed, packed his bag, and took the next train to Bern. From there, he was able to send a code telegram to R. His instructions were given to him verbally 2 days later, in the bedroom of his hotel, at an hour when no one was likely to be seen walking along the corridor. And within 24 hours, through a circuitous route, he arrived at Lucerne.